How many people are here for their first time? Welcome. Glad to have you. I was 4 years old this month. Does anybody else here have a birthday? Good. Give us your name, your disease, and your age. Happy birthday. Who else? Saw a lot of hands. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. All right. Anybody else? Don't we have any eating disorder birthdays or Al-Anon birthdays? There you go. Happy birthday. All right. Anybody else? Well, happy birthday to all of us and welcome. A few announcements. There's a sign-up sheet on our knees. Unfold your legs. Close your eyes. And let's take just a few minutes to be grateful and to get in some positive attitude here. Imagine yourself when you're about 5 years old and everything's the way it's supposed to be for you at 5 years old. And you're coming home from school and you get into the house and you smell your favorite meal cooking and Mom and Dad are there. And Mom goes in the living room and sits down with you. And you sit in her lap, feel her arms around you. And just stay there for a few minutes and feel that love. This is fantasy. It doesn't matter what reality was like. This is fantasy. Just feel that love, the love you needed then. And know that any time you need that love, you can always do just what you're doing now. You can take a few minutes for yourself, the time you deserve, and you can sit down and you can be at peace with yourself and you can feel that love. And that can put us in a positive attitude. Now with that love, let's welcome someone that will tell us about positive attitudes, and here is Leo. I promise you he's here somewhere. There he is. I think he and Paul took off together.
Everybody, my name is Leo, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leo.
And I just want to say there, there's so many people here tonight, and I know that it's so important for you to be able to be relaxed in order for you to hear what it is that's going on. I have no problem with some of you who are standing at the sides, or any of you who are at the back. If you've got a younger person at the back, try to come and sit near the front if you want to, so you can be closer if you want to do that. It's very important. This is your meeting, and it's very important that you're comfortable if you're going to hear. I promise you, because these meetings have become so important to so many people that I'm spending a lot of time putting stuff on the board, and it will be left on the board. So that if you want to make some notes on what is said, you can do so. One of the things that I have to tell you before we start the lecture, because there's kind of a lot of notes that are given, because this is like a public forum. And in order for you to be able to get the best out of the forum, we have to tell you what's available. You've probably seen that the importance of people with audio tapes, then I don't need to tell you how important all of that is. So it's great to be here. Somebody said to me, what do you call a nun who has a sex change? Well, a transistor. Hey, don't laugh too loud. We've got a few of them here. I don't know whether many of you don't always know this, because, you know, you just think priests come out of trees. But actually, priests have to be trained. You wouldn't think so if you listen to some of us. But priests have to be trained, and we have to be trained particularly on confession. Because, you know, it's an important thing in a priest's life, not only to hear confessions, but to teach people, if they need to make their confession, how to do it. And now that's done is in seminary. And they train you. What they do is they get you to sit up at the front of the class and pretend to be a priest, and they pick somebody else to pretend to be the penitent, the person with the sins. And the professor listens to you to see how you do. Because if you give foolish advice, then you need to be told. Well, they pick me. To be the priest. And they picked a very good friend of mine, whose name was Ian, who was a bit like the Errol Flynn of the seminary. He was always up to mischief, you know. And they picked him to be the penitent. So he came up and he knelt down, and I had to be the priest, and they trained us. And I had to speak in front of all this group, and the professor was at the back. And he knelt down and he did the test. He said, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned." And I said, "The Lord be on your heart and on your lips, that you may make a true confession, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." Well, he got into it right away. He said, "Since my last confession, I've been to bed with an elephant." An elephant? So I thought I was being very, very wise when I said, "How many times?" The professor shouted from the back of the church, "No, you fool. Was it a male elephant or a female elephant?" So it just shows you, by the way, talking about priests and talking about elephants, you know I'm from England. You can tell the way I speak. But there is also a visitor here who is a monk from the English province, although he's working at the present time in Ireland, and he's staying actually with Father Kevin, so you can imagine he's having a terrible time. And he's visiting, so I think that you might like to welcome a Franciscan priest who's with us, Father Damien. Father Damien, why don't you stand up and let's... You see, these evenings with Father Leo are so popular, they're sending them all the way from Ireland now. Okay. Now, just so that we get into what I'm talking about, we are talking about positive attitudes. And many of you have been so kind with regards to the comments you've made on the book, but here it is. I've got to get the right one. I want you to know that this was written for people who are chemically dependent, ACOAs, people with eating disorders, and people who are not religious, maybe not religious at all, but who want to get their lives positive, and they want to change their lives. I did make a reference to Elizabeth Taylor's book, Taking Off. One of the things that she says, which reassures me, was that there was a point, not so many years ago, when she had to look at herself and really make some changes. And she also had to believe that she could make those changes. this book, Say Yes to Life, was written because I believe that all of us have within us the capacity to change our lives. And I want to read you what I said. Albert Einstein is the quotation. Albert Einstein said, "The real problem is in the hearts and minds of men. The real problem is in the hearts and minds of men." We are facing not so much a drug problem, ladies and gentlemen, as a people problem. And this requires a solution from the people. And I believe the solution and recovery has already been given by God. But it must be discovered within ourselves. We need to seek out what is truly in our minds and our hearts. What are our problems? What are our needs? And what are we to do? And what are we prepared to do? And where are we going in our lives? Those are our questions. Today, it is not enough for me to know my problems. I need also to talk about them. Today I choose to express my feelings. And as a final prayer, a final thought, God, I thank you for the creative gift of communication. We must never knock communication. I know that the answer to the drug problem, the answer to codependency, the answer to eating disorders, the answer to low self-esteem is not simply in education. I know that. I know that the answer simply isn't in putting on programs or giving lectures. I know that. But I also know that if people are going to change, they need help. If people are going to be able to look at their lives, they need guides. And if you like, prompters. So that they can look at themselves and say, yes, that is what is going on with me. Then it's down to you. You know, I'm enough of a recovering codependent, I hope, to know that I cannot fix you. I know that I cannot fix you, but that does not stop me, and it's part of, if I may say so, the 12 steps. It's part of my responsibility in recovery to share the message. Now, an adjunct to what I'm saying tonight, I said it in the introduction, is intervention. Many of you think in terms of intervention as being the stylized intervention. Okay, when you sit down with a person who is sick and suffering, and there are some patients who are here tonight who have come into treatment because of that, and it's very successful. I think in PIH we have an intervention group, well I know we do, and I think over 90% of the interventions that Kelly does lead to treatment and recovery. So many of the patients who are here have come as a direct result of family members, friends, loved ones intervening on the individual and letting them hear not only how the disease was affecting them, but how it was also affecting the people who live with them. But I also believe that tonight I can also do a kind of an intervention on yourselves. And I think any educator, any speaker, anybody who's worth his salt does a kind of intervention on you so that you first of all believe that you can do it. You also really understand that if you keep shouting at people, you're not going to, quite frankly, achieve what you want. So it doesn't work. The way is always love, but it's tough love. The key to healing, I don't care what it is, those things that I mentioned, eating disorders, chemical dependency, family healing, relationships, all of it is dependent upon love. And I believe it starts when you begin to love yourself, and in the loving of yourself, realize the capacity that you have, not only to change your life, but to influence the lives of others. My 11th birthday, as you know, is in July. The intervention that was done on me was done by my family and my bishop. And they took a risk, and risk is going to be part of one of the things that I'm talking about tonight. They took a risk. But the risk that they took was a risk in love. Sometimes people need to hear a different message to the message that they've been hearing. And I believe that you who are family, you who are friends, are the best people in the world to give that message. So tonight I thought it was real appropriate in the context of spirituality, which is what I believe is the key to treatment, the key to recovery, the key to getting well. Spirituality, a love of yourself and an ability to find God in your life. I want to talk about developing some positive and creative and affirmative attitudes in our recovery. Now, believe you me, if you hear this message tonight, if you're concerned about somebody else, you may be able to, if you like, plug into that courage that's in you to give the message that that person needs to hear. Okay? None of us, as John Donne said, no man is an island. We need one another. For those of you who are not religious, please hear me. This is nothing to do with Christianity specifically. Anybody who is a Christian here will, of course, I hope, be able to identify with what I'm saying. But those are people here who are Jewish. There are people here who do not belong to any religion. Do not think that we're trying to convert you in some kind of cunning way to some kind of church. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I am trying to do, though, is to tell you that the bottom line for me is that all human beings are children of God. All of us. And the more I listen to some of the philosophies of other religions and some of the practices of the great teachers, I find how similar they are. You listen, I could say something to you, I'll say it to you now, you may have heard me say it to you before. There are as many paths to God as there are feet to tread them. There are as many paths to God as there are feet to tread them. Who said that? The Buddha. Now that's amazingly similar to Jesus Christ, who said, in my house there are many mansions. Okay? In other words, there are many sheep from different backgrounds. The bottom line with all the great teachers is, if you are to really love God, begin to love yourself. And if you can love yourself, then you will begin to love the world. That's what we're going to try to explore tonight. And I've done it in the way that I like to do it. I make some notes, and then I talk to you about them. The first thing that I think we need to do, the absolutely first thing we need to do, is make a decision. We're not going to get anywhere until we start to make a decision. Now then, I don't know why you're here. I don't know what it is that's brought you here tonight. I don't know whether it's an eating disorder, I don't know whether it's a chemical dependency problem, I don't know whether you're recovering and you want to hear more about a spiritual program, I don't know whether you've got a problem with your own self-esteem, codependency issues, adult-child issues, I don't know. All I know is that if things are going to start to change and if recovery is going to begin, then there has to be a decision. In one of the books that I wrote called Spirituality and Recovery, I called it The Moment. There was a moment in my life when I saw not just that I was an alcoholic, but I saw it. I mean, I had a car accident, I saw the blood, I saw the pain, I saw the fear, and I'd never seen it like that before, but there was a moment, and I've always said that's a very special moment for me because I reach for that moment, and really every day of my life I never get away from that moment. There's a moment when you suddenly see it's not working. Let's just be commonsensical, if you like. There's a point when you turn around and say, is my life, the way I'm doing it, working? If it's working, carry on. If you're drinking, if you're using of cocaine, you think is working for you, and your family's happy, then how can I stop you? Impossible to stop you. But my belief is that people start to change when they experience pain. Now, the pain can be physical, the pain might be mental, or the pain might be emotional. But at some point, you kind of catch yourself, and you might have to talk to yourself, and you say, "Hit it, I ain't cutting it. I'm not cutting it doing it this way. My family's talking about leaving me. The job's on the line. When I look at myself in the mirror, I don't like myself.
So if I don't like myself and I don't like what I see, then I don't think other people can like it either. In other words, there's a moment. Now, it's real interesting because, of course, everybody who's a writer or a speaker uses different words. Elizabeth Taylor talks about a click. When a thing clicks. And she said she was married to, as you probably know, she was married to a senator. She was living in Washington. She was more than 60, I think, or 70 pounds, maybe close on 80 pounds overweight. And she caught herself after showering in Washington. She had a great deal of pain. She didn't like herself. She kept denying it. She was eating more the more people came to talk to her. And one day, she was in the morning. He'd gone off to work. He'd gone off to the Senate. The marriage was not good. And she saw a full-length mirror, and she had to go into the shower, and she passed it. Now, she'd passed it many times before, but this time, she caught herself in the mirror. It's in the book. And she looks at herself, and she stops. She doesn't want to stop. So this is where the decision is made, if you like, the beginnings of the decision. She doesn't want to see it, but she knows this is her. Now, this is the one who was in Cleopatra. This is the one who was Scarlet, you know, in the Lassie series. This is the woman who has been known for years to be one of the most attractive and beautiful women in the world. She looks at herself. Says, I was a mess. I was a mess. She called and she said, something clicked. Well, I'm talking about the click. Something clicked. And she says, that was the one click that I've never forgotten. She said, it didn't stop me enough for drinking and using. She went on to make a show with her ex-husband, Richard Burton, called Private Lives. And after she finished the show, which she hated, he hated it, she hated it, it was a parody of a show, she said that she had a second click. And the second click was when, after doing Private Lives, she realized that she was getting fat again, she was drinking again, and she just simply wasn't happy. She wasn't happy. And she checked into the Betty Ford Center. Now, what I'm saying to you is that at some point, for her to start being the kind of person you see today, she had to make a decision. Either she had a moment, or, in her words, there was a click. And there was an intervention done on herself. Now, there's a key word, an intervention done on yourself. When you say, I agree with what people are saying, and I'm going to do something. Now, tonight, you make whatever intervention you do, whatever clicks you need to, you grasp whatever moment you want. But if you're here for something, then you start to look at that honestly, in the recesses of your own mind, to make a decision. I'll tell you something. It is your life. Dick, me, Sharon, Father Kevin, we go home tonight. We go home to our world. We ain't calling people and they're not calling us. You ask yourself, what do you go home to? And if you're happy with the quality of your life, fine. But my suspicion is that perhaps you need to make a decision to start doing things differently. So the decision is absolutely crucial. The second thing I want to talk about, and I think it's very important, is start to identify what the problem really is. Now, last month I talked about relapse. I know many people who are recovering alcoholics who are still having relapse issues. You know, and for a long, long time we've talked about the fact, why is it that some people who seem to be working a program relapse and start to use and drink again? Well, I'll tell you, they're not happy. You may turn around and say that's simplistic, but they're not happy. They're not feeling they're getting their rewards. Because if they were working a full recovery program and enjoying sobriety, then nothing out there would appeal to them. The relapse issue comes when somehow or other you're not happy with where you are in your life, and you go then back to that thing that you think is going to reward you. And by the way, you can have a relapse situation in relationships. And be careful, because it's not just about chemicals. If you've had a problem with relationships and you get yourself involved in an adult child recovery program or a codependency program or an Al-Anon program, and you could be practicing that program for a number of years, and then
You suddenly start noticing that you're getting involved in sick relationships again. Relationships with people who are using you, or you're allowing yourself to be used, or you're missing your power in your life. And you know what I mean by your power of choice. Then you might be on a relapse situation and you might need to do an intervention on yourself. And say, what child, what's going on? Am I going back to the old ways? Am I going back to the old relationships? Am I going back to the old behavior patterns? Because if I am, then I can bet myself that the problems that I had will come back. Identify what the problems are. I cannot stress to you enough the eating disorder problem. It is rampant, and it's rampant in recovery. And the tragedy with it is so obviously something that takes away your self-esteem and your self-worth. Okay? I'm not saying that you've got to be like the bathing beauties in the magazine. But all I'm saying is that somehow or other, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you have got to be able to like what you see. Okay? I'm a great believer in the mind, and I'm a great believer in thinking that a human being is more than the physical. True, true, true. But also, let's not neglect the fact that God also created the human being. And to like yourself physically is not a bad thing. You know, to have a self-like, you know, to have some kind of self-worth, I think shows in the way you dress, shows in the way you appear, shows in the way you dance, shows in the way you walk. I believe that. I believe self-esteem can be seen in the way a person interacts with another. But to do that, you've got to have the right relationship with yourself. And I'm serious. You know, I think that we need to look at our eating patterns. I do. I do it regularly. And I think that we all need to do that. I've put on the board here some of the things that you might want to look at tonight, because it's a large group of people from different backgrounds. I mentioned the food, the sex issue. Now, I don't have to tell you, I ain't a prude. I'm not one of these people who say God created sex and then rather wished he hadn't. You know, look what they're doing with it. No. No, I'm not like that. I think that sexuality is part of spirituality. I'm all for that. Intimacy, enjoying yourself sexually, enjoying your bodies, enjoying your minds, enjoying your ideas, is what it is to be a human being. You want to have a little ding-a-ling-a-ling with one another, that's fine. And by the way, as long as you do it responsibly now, don't be silly, okay? We've got to be careful nowadays. But having said that to you, okay, there are some people who develop an obsession. It's really not sexuality. It's not the sexuality we understand. It's really an abuse of their sexuality. And it's really an abuse of themselves. And my conversations with people who have identified themselves as sex addicts is that it's around self-worth issues. What they're really talking about is they don't think that they're a man, or they don't think they're a real woman unless they're getting it on with somebody. So really what we're talking about is not sexuality. We're talking about, again, a self-worth, self-esteem issue. And all I'm saying is if you notice that, and if it's causing pain in your life or making you take risks, either in your relationship or your marriage, or legally, because there's a lot of things that can go on that are illegal that you may not be getting caught with, but if you got caught, it could affect your whole life and your profession and everything else. And you know, if you're listening to me, what I'm talking about, then you need to do a kind of intervention on yourself and identify that as a problem. And just in your own mind, identify it as a problem and start to make some decisions to do something about it. The other thing that I've talked about, and it's been talked about so much now, as well as, of course, alcohol, is the relapse issue. There are many, many, many people who relapse back to using and drinking because they're not happy, or because a compulsion and an obsession has developed in another area. They may be working a very good, we can talk about that, a very good 12-step program on their alcoholism. But they're missing their codependency, they're missing their adult child issues, and many of them are missing their eating disorder issues. Now, all I'm saying to you is, you're the person, you're the best thermometer of what's going on with your body and your mind and your emotions. I believe that. But don't be afraid of confronting yourself in the silence of your own mind. And by the way, people have made comments to you historically. In other words, if you've had in the last 6 months people commenting on you being angry, being irritable, isolating, don't just discount them. They may be seeing something about you that you're not wanting to look at in yourself, even in recovery. So if we're spiritual people, we are open to the comments and the criticisms that are being made by other people. Okay, now the other thing is, and I think it's very important, let's start, after we've made the decision, we've identified the problem, let's start to make some steps. It's not enough, as I say, to say, I know what the problem is. That's not enough. Knowing you're an alcoholic doesn't get you sober. Knowing that you've got an eating disorder doesn't get you sober. Knowing that you're a codependent doesn't get you into a self-love situation. You've got to start to follow through by making some small but important steps. Okay? Steps to self-love. Now, I'm a great believer. I'm a great believer. I'm not going to do it tonight, but I'm a great believer. If you want to get to wellness, start to identify some of the things that are causing you pain. Okay? In other words, if you find yourself being dishonest, if you find yourself being lazy, if you find yourself being a gossip, if you catch yourself being angry and irritable, start to list those things on a piece of paper. Just list the things that you don't like about your behavior or your attitude or your way of living. Just start to list them on a piece of paper. And then work towards the opposite. In other words, once you've identified what the problem is, it's like the old saying, if you know where the hole is in the road, you can avoid it. But if you don't know where the hole is, then you're going to keep falling down the hole. Okay, so one of the things is, in order for you to start identifying what steps do I need to make, do it the flip side. First of all, pick out those things and be real honest with yourself. Really do a good intervention on yourself. List those things that you don't like about how you're behaving. And begin then to do the turnaround. Okay, now I believe that you can do it. See, I'm a great believer. I used to be with somebody called Dr. Rader, and he used to always say to the patients, you know, you're going to be the best doctor to yourself. You're the professional about your disease. You're going to have to be the best counselor to yourself. And you're going to have to be the best nurse to yourself. What he meant by that is, after treatment, after being in a treatment center, you've got the job of being responsible for your life. You cannot, forever and a day, spend your whole life in treatment. As I often say to people, there is life after therapy. Okay? And it's very important that you don't stay in therapy all the rest of your life, otherwise that can be another addiction. All right? Some tips that I would give. One is, ask yourself, do you have an exercise program? Just ask yourself that one basic question. Do you have an exercise program? I'm not being funny, but I think that there isn't one person in this room who should not have an exercise program. Now let me tell you, I'm not talking about going to the gym and spending $200. I'm talking about, do you walk? Do you get some exercise of walking? Those of you who've been cleared by a doctor, do you think in terms of walking fast or jogging? Do you do exercise in your room and in your home? Do you have a bicycle? In other words, if you really, and some of you claim, and I think that's one of the reasons why you come to listen to me, claim to really want a spiritual program, I've got to ask yourself, when you say God does not make junk, then are you looking after your body or are you treating it as junk? So the first thing I'll say to you is, I don't think anybody in this room, all it means is sometimes after dinner on a Sunday or a Saturday, say, that's our walk time. I travel the United States. I was in St. Louis last week. We live in the nicest state, I believe, in the United States. Now, I know last week we had terrible weather, which is very unusual for us. Father Kevin hasn't been saying his prayers again. Okay? But one of the things that I want you to understand is that we live in this beautiful state, beautiful rivers, beautiful mountains. You'd even snow if you want to go skiing. Do we take advantage of it? You know, we're not far from the ocean. How often do we go walking? How often do we exercise? Now, I believe that that's very important. I'm confronting you a bit on it, but ask yourself, in your own mind.
And if you're young and you're overweight, why don't you start doing something so that you can tone up? Second thing is, I've mentioned it indirectly, of course, before, what are we eating? How much are we eating? Now, I'm not saying don't eat meat. I'm not saying don't eat fish. I'm a great believer in you've got to kind of like whatever nutrition plan you're on. But have a plan. Don't just eat everything that's put in front with you. Make choices, just like you do about relationships, just like you do about meetings, just like you do about television, which channel you're going to watch. Don't keep eating eggs. Don't keep having sandwiches. Try to vary your diet, and I believe you'll start to enjoy your life, and you'll start to enjoy your food, and you've got to have a good relationship with food. Food isn't the enemy, any more than people are the enemy. Food's not the enemy. It's usually our own negative attitudes about ourselves. Very important. Next thing that I put down on the board, okay, is friendships, relationships. Okay, who have we got in our lives? Who are our friends? Who do we spend time with, quality time with? Now, you may be in a special loving relationship, engagement, marriage, a special friendship, fine. Do you have other people? Have you got yourself so locked into one situation that can be a very sickness of codependency that you don't allow other people in your life? Why don't we start really looking at, have we got some friendships in our life that we value? People we can talk to, people who inspire us, people who are positive, people who say, go for it, Leo, do it. Somebody called me up tonight. I'm not being funny. Some man called Dr. Larry Siegel. Dr. Larry Siegel called me up from Florida. Some of you may not know his name, but he's one of the top doctors working with AIDS. And he called me up and he asked me whether would I be willing to give a lecture on spirituality. And he followed up. Larry's like that. He's a very aggressive doctor, but a very good spiritual program. He said, Leo, why don't you write a meditation book for AIDS patients and their families? And I said, well, thanks, Larry. I'll think about it. He said, Leo, why don't you do it and make a commitment to yourself? I said, okay, Larry, I heard you. He said, I don't know whether you have. He said, you know, he said, it's got nothing to do with whether you want to be involved with AIDS or whether you don't want to be involved in AIDS treatment. Do you realize the numbers of families, wives, husbands, children, mothers, fathers, friends, who are devastated by this disease? And he gave me the projections of the numbers of people who are likely to be affected in the United States. Now, the only reason why I give you that example is the guys pushed me. Obviously, it's on my mind now to be talking about it to you tonight. It's on the tape. Everybody buys the tape. I can't get away from it now. There we are. But what I'm saying is, he's the kind of friend is like that. Now, I've often said, if you're going to go for a job, go for it. And if you've got real friends, they'll support you. If you want to, if you need to do something in your life and you want to make some changes, perhaps it's time for you to do that. Friends shouldn't keep saying, you can't do that. Oh, don't do that. Oh, they'll never take you. You get people like that. Oh, no, I don't think you're qualified. Oh, you won't like New York. Give it a go. You've got one life. In this earth, what the next one's like, we don't know. And anybody who tells you they know, they don't know. I bet you they don't know. We don't know. But we know about this one. We know about this one. And I'll tell you, I made a big risk when I came to the United States. Made a big risk when I came to the United States. Best risk I ever took. And there were people back there. My mother was one. You've met my mother. Nice lady. You know my mother. 76 and she doesn't use glasses. She drinks right out of the bottle. You've met my mother. When I told her that I was going to the United States, I said, I'm going to California. I've got a job with a hospital in California. When I said, she said, why? I said, Mother, because it's time for me to move. She said, why? I said, there are opportunities there and I can work with chemical dependency. She said, why? I said, Mother, I want to go. Why? Now she comes over. She wants to come and live in the United States. She's not coming, but she wants to live in the United States. So what I'm saying to you is, get people around you, family, friends, people who are positive with you. People who support you. Don't keep being brought down. Very important. Okay, because many of us are very much, you know, I say it about adolescents, but it's true of all human beings. We're imitative. Human beings are very imitative. Models, styles, hairs, clothes, different colors come in. That's what the fashion people do. We are imitative. If we're imitative about hairstyles, if we're imitative about language and styles of words, if we're imitative about dress, we can also be imitative about a style of life. Now hear that. And you have around you people who say, go for it. Have a go. You know, many of you have talked about writing, getting into therapy work, getting into counseling work, whatever it is, go for it. Believe in yourself. You've got a chance. Never be in a situation when you're 74 years of age or 78 years of age. And you're lying on your bed and you say, you know, I wish, Dad. Because it's too late then. Now is the time to go for it. Sensible risk. Supported by friends, and what makes this world. Okay? Four. A very basic, very important thing, a little bit connected with friends only. This is when you do it to yourself, and she did it. What she said was, she looked in the mirror, and she said, I am a beautiful person. I am a beautiful person. I am loved. You start making positive affirmations to yourself. I am loved. I am loved by God. I am loved. I am beautiful. And I'll tell you something. If any of you doubt your power, you are powerful enough to kill yourself. Now, if you want to talk about power, you are powerful enough to kill yourself. And some of us in this room have come very close to that by our attitudes and by our behavior. So don't be in any doubt about your power. Also, you are powerful enough to bring love and to show love. You are a beautiful person. You are a child of God. You make the difference. So you want to start making some very positive affirmations about yourself. Okay? Believe in yourself. Don't keep pulling yourself down. Okay? And I've put that down because Raquel Lerner has written a book called Affirmations. If you haven't seen that book, you haven't got that book, she wrote it for adult children of alcoholics. Why did she write it for adult children of alcoholics? I'll tell you why. You don't mind, do you? I'm not standing on your cheek. I do that sometimes. I'll tell you. She wrote that book about positive affirmations because she knew that many adult children of alcoholics, because of their growing up in a dysfunctional home, because of the abuse, mental, emotional, physical, have basically lost the belief in themselves. And when she wrote, and she said, and these are 50, 60, 70-year-old people who are adult children of alcoholics, who need to get in touch with the fact that they are not responsible for their parents drinking. They are not responsible for the divorce. They are not responsible for the death. You cannot live another person's life. You cannot take a responsibility for another person's life. You can only take a responsibility for yourself and for your own actions and your own decisions. Affirmations. Very simple. Any of you can do it. In the mirror. First thing in the morning, I am a beautiful person. I am powerful. I am loving. Those kind of things. You can create. Look at this room. If we could muster the energy that's in this room. I'm not being funny with you. This morning I said Mass and we had, at the 10 o'clock Mass we had probably about 90 people. At the 8 o'clock we had probably about 40. Now, what I'm trying to say to you is, there's something in this program that is bringing people together. We're not saying to people when we come and sit down, oh, hello, what religion are you? We're not saying that. We don't care if you're Roman Catholic, Buddhist. We don't care. We don't even mind Methodists coming. See how open-minded we are? We don't encourage it, but we don't mind. We don't care. We just want you to be here, to love, to take care. We don't care. Start making those affirmations. The other thing is this. I can't recommend it enough. A 12-step program. Okay, I cannot recommend it enough. And the reason I say it is, the 12-step program is a program of remembrance. Always remember that. It's a program of remembrance. Whenever you go to a meeting, somebody says, "My name's Harry, and I'm an alcoholic." And you remember. Any speaker says what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You go to an ACOA, you go to an OA meeting, you go to a codependency meeting, you go to an Al-Anon meeting. Same thing. We admitted we were powerless over. And our lives have become unmanageable. And then you suddenly start hearing recovery, I hope. We don't stay in the sickness. What we start saying is, "I was sick. Now I'm recovering. I used to do those things, try and fix everybody, try and take care of everybody." The 12-step program is when people who have a similar problem get together. And what's wrong with that? Across the world. I told you a few weeks ago in Thailand, I'm sitting with a whole lot of Buddhists. And they're talking about the 12 steps. That blows your mind. Some little Buddhist who can't even speak English properly, he says, "I'm going to have to call my sponsor." Sponsor? What's going on? All over. So powerful. I've said it on another tape. I don't care. Say it again. No, I care. What am I shouting about? I've got the job. This is it. We thought we were going to take the world back with religion. I'm not sure that that's happening. But something in that meeting between Bill W. and Dr. Bob might take the world back to God. It unites everybody. I have yet, and I'll be talking with Dick later, I have yet to meet anybody who would not benefit from this program. Look at the love. When Kelly stands up in front of you and says, "Say hello to your neighbors," you do it joyously. Hello, hello, hello. Church people, it's a bit harder for them. Why do I have to do this? Where are we going to put my hymn book? Put it on the floor. Okay. And remember, by the way, it's a daily program. Okay? It's a daily program. Every day. You don't just practice it when you're at the meeting. Every day. A spiritual program in all areas of our lives. We practice it at work. We practice it at school. We practice it in the hospital. We practice it in our homes. It's a daily program. It's a life program based on remembrance of who I am. I must never forget who I am. Okay. The next thing is, and this is a very personal thing, I just call it, get some rest. Okay, take care of yourself. Again, some of you are more familiar with it, called HALT. Don't get too hungry, don't get too angry, don't get too lonely, don't get too tired. Take some rest. Rest your body, rest your mind, and rest your emotions. Kelly did a little bit of that when she got you to just to be quiet and calm before the lecture this evening. Some of you may need to go on retreats. You know, and I do think that we should do another retreat. I did one about 2 years ago. I haven't done one since. It was good. Some of you went to that, remember it? It was good, huh? We enjoyed that. Journey into self, a retreat. And do some meditation. By the way, meditation exercises, some of you don't worry about it being complicated. Oh, I'm not a monk, I'm not a nun, how do I do meditation? Simple. Sit on the toilet and be quiet. Don't make a noise. get the out of the way and sit there. And just sit there for a bit. Just let it bake. Sit there. All right? Sit there, okay? And say something. Now, I'll tell you something. I can do something very simple, because some of you may know it. There's a lovely line from a psalm. I'll tell you what it is. It's called, "Be still and know that I am God." And then what you do is you say, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be. So you come in. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be. And you do that. It's a very simple exercise. And you will get silent, just like this room did. And you will get in touch with your power. And you will be refreshed to face your day, your world, your people. It's a very simple exercise. Okay, risk. You're taking a risk tonight. Yeah, you're taking a risk coming here, right, Bola? You don't know what I'm going to say, neither do I. Your risk is risk with yourself. In the quietness, as I say, of your own mind, risk with yourself. And say to yourself, very often just write something down to yourself. Write a letter to yourself. As if you're a loving parent to yourself. You talk about getting in touch with your child within. Some of you do a lot of that, getting in touch with the child within, the ability to play, a lot of adult children. But also be a loving parent to yourself and write a letter to yourself of what you need to hear. Write to yourself. If you can just stand outside of yourself, some of the things you need to hear and write it down, take that risk. And you'll be surprised at what you might be saying to yourself. And then with others. Start taking a risk with others. I was talking to some people earlier this morning, before I was coming here. They're coming here, they came tonight too, but I saw them this morning. And they said, you know, sometimes we have to take a risk even with saying, will you come for dinner? The risk might be, will you come out with me to the dance? We're not talking now about getting involved in a heavy relationship, just, will you come with me to a dance? Can I take you to a movie? Can we sit down and have dinner? Can you come? Some people have a hard time with that. Okay? And the fear, of course, is the fear of rejection. You know, if somebody says, I don't want to go. If you get in touch with the fact that they have a choice and you have a choice and they may not want to go. But you are loving yourself when you take the risk to ask that person, would you like to come to a movie house? And if you do experience some pain of rejection, then you talk about it with somebody. I went and asked Alice to go to a movie. She said no. And then the person will probably say, well, how did that make you feel? And the person will say, well, I felt rejected. And yet, well, then the person might say, why? Because if you have choices and there are some things that you don't want to do with people, and then you might catch yourself saying, but I always do what other people want. And then you say, well, perhaps you need to look at that. You know, it is okay for you to say no. And it's okay for you to say yes. And if you're like me, you know, it's very important. If I'm not comfortable in a place, it shows. And I've learned better for me not to be there than to be in a place and not want to be there. Okay? We shine. When we are in a place where we can love and be loved, we shine like stars. But we don't shine when we're in a place that we don't want to be at. We have the power of choice. It was given to us by God. It's called freedom. We are not slaves. Today, we are not slaves. And also take some risks with God. Talk to him. Get angry. What of it? What's going on? Why is this happening again? Yeah, just let it go, you know. I don't appreciate this. I know it's a lovely world, but at the moment I don't appreciate it.
Why isn't the telephone going?
Nobody's calling me today. What's going on? And you might get a message back.
Why don't you call someone?
Ha! Let me talk to your mother. I don't have to put up with this. I'll report you to your mother. Ah! Okay, take some risks. If you believe in a loving, playful God, he'll play with you. Or she will. Yeah, huh? Yeah! God's the she and he doesn't know it. Don't worry about it. Risk. Take risk. The only thing I will say is, and I say it cautionarily, okay, don't take crazy risks and justify that as a risk. There's a difference between risk and insanity. Sometimes we need to be told that. We don't have to stand in front of a great big truck going, ah, Father Leo told me to take a risk. Ah. You've got to be sensible. Okay? It's okay to take a sensible risk. Don't go crazy. Do something that has the possibility of achievement. Don't be stupid. Insanity was what we used to have. Let's base our risks on some level of reality. But nevertheless, risk. Okay, and now the other one that I want to talk about is self-image. Now, the reason why I want to talk about self-image, very important self-image. There's a difference between image and self-image. Image is the kind of appearance we make to others. That's our image to the world, to our families, to our jobs. Self-image is who we are to ourselves. You know, we talk about the image of God inside of us. It's when we go to that self-image inside of us, when we lie in bed and we know ourselves. And we try to get in touch with ourselves. Image is what we appear to other people about. Self-image is who we are. And when we talk about developing a healthy self-image, we're talking about developing that which is within. And we are the people who can find that out. Now, I believe all of us in this room reflect something of God in his variety or her variety. It's very important we understand that. Okay? We're not just talking about our image in the church or our image in the world or our image in the hospital. Self-image is developing those qualities of who we are. Very important. Now, just quickly, turning this around so we can get the rest of the points in for this lecture tonight. One of the most important things I can share with you is your power. I don't know how often it needs to be said. It probably will need to be said till the end of time. God created you and me to create. And if you wrote that down and think about that every day, if a thing's going to be done, we have to do it. And all the struggle, all the pain, all the effort we put into making a thing reveals our power. Now, there's a very interesting thing that was done with mice. Two mice. Okay? And I'm going to talk about it more with the rewards. But what it's talking about is the mouse in this experiment. The mouse that was presented with the challenge and overcame the challenges and was rewarded was the mouse that survived in this experiment. And it's real interesting, and it's not me who's just saying it. It's being said in many different contexts all over the United States and all over the world. People who have struggled have identified their pain or their point of struggle as their point of growth. That's why it's so sad and so pathetic to meet somebody who is spoiled. Somebody who has been given everything. Because they may not be flabby on the outside, but inside they're flabby. When you fight, and when you struggle, then you have some pride in your achievement. And in this room, there have been many of us who have struggled. Now, the struggle is part of it. Now, what I want you to understand is God has given us the power. Ask yourself a very basic question. Do you think God wants you to fail or succeed? And if you say that God wants me to succeed, then he's on your side. But ask yourself the $64,000 question. Are you on your side? It's not the issue of God. It's you. You have the power. Do you believe you can't get well? Do you believe you can't lose that weight? Do you believe you have to stay as sick and pitchy-potted, codependent? Do you believe that? I don't. But if you believe it, that's exactly what will happen. Do you believe you have to be a feeble mouse looking at the world from the outside? Do you believe that this game of life is a game that you have been invited into, not as a spectator, but as a participant? Do you believe it? On it depends everything. And last but not least of the 10 points, you talk about self-worth. What is your worth-ship? You know, the only reason why I say it is, some of you are very familiar with the word worship, worship. Worship of God. I wonder whether you realize that worship of God means worth-ship. What is the worth of God in your life, and how do you reflect that in your praise? Well, let's turn it around a bit. Are you able to get your worth-ship as a new human being? Have you got in touch with the fact that you carry that specialness in you? There will never be another you. You are unique. You will love and you will hug and you will reach out and you will use words, and your intonation of your voice is yours. For you to touch somebody and reach that person, you have to do it. You have to do this. For you to hug a person, you have to do it. For you to say the words of forgiveness and acceptance, you have to do it. It's you. It's always you. And that's the way God has chosen to reveal himself. Oh, some of you know about priests and prophets and seers and kings of Israel. God works through all of them. But he also works through you. Well, will you let God work through you? Will you shine? Now, I wanted to give you some tips. Okay? Some tips that I think some of you may find very helpful. The first tip is, don't be too proud that you will not reward yourself. Reward yourself for what you do. This is something that Elizabeth Taylor talks about. She met a girl who was a cocaine addict. She met a person, a cocaine addict, alcoholic, and obese. And this woman wanted to get married. And she says, when you get into a recovery program, when you start working a recovery program and have a year of sobriety, a year of being clean, a year of working a good program for you, she says in a book, I will buy you your wedding dress. It was a reward. Sometimes it's okay to receive rewards. Reward yourself for your achievements. You don't have to announce it to people, but reward yourself.
take yourself out somewhere. In your mind, say to yourself, if I get to this and I do this, next year I'm going to Acapulco. With Father Leo on the cruise. I'm so tricky. Tricky, Dickie. Okay. Tips. This is for family members who are here. For friends. Give some encouraging words. I know that we say family members are hurt by the disease, etc. But if you're here visiting a patient, it's not easy being a patient. It's not easy going and talking about your life for the first few months of meetings. And some people here in the first few months of meetings, if you see somebody trying, give them an encouraging word. Let them know that you love them and you care for them and you really admire what they're trying to do. It doesn't take a minute. Give some encouraging words. Fathers, mothers, grandmothers, children with your father. If you're sitting with your father who's a cocaine addict, heroin addict, and you see that your dad's really trying to work this program and he's trying to get well, it's okay for you to say, I really appreciate what you're doing, Dad. Sometimes we kind of think they know that. We assume that they know that. We never say. Sometimes we don't tell people how much we love them. All that ego, all that pride. Perhaps our risk, you know, I talked about risk earlier. Perhaps we should say to somebody that we love, hey, you know, I really do love you. I really appreciate what you're doing and what you're trying to do. God, you don't know what influence or effect that can have on somebody's life. It doesn't take a minute. Encouraging word. The other thing, tip is, when we gonna start? Okay, Father Leo. Okay, Father Leo. Yep, we're all ready to go. Yep. We're ready to move. When? Oh, next week. Gonna give it a go next week. Birthday in August, start in August. Ha, yep, sit. No. Start tonight. Start tonight. Start your attention tonight. Don't put it off. Whilst your energy is there, and whilst your focus is there, start tonight. Whatever it is that's clicked with you, begin it tonight. Set reasonable goal. Remember, we're very compulsive and obsessive people. Don't say when you leave this room, right, I'm going to lose 60 pounds by next week. Elsie, I'm never going to lose my temper again. Come on. We're human beings. We will make mistakes. We are imperfect. We say it enough. So, set reasonable goals. Little steps, small little steps become very powerful. Very, very powerful. I've got down here, it doesn't have to be the same, of course. But look in the mirror. I took that directly from Elizabeth Taylor's book. Look in the mirror. I'll tell you why. You are what you look. You will change. Okay? You will change into being the loving person, because the wonderful thing about spirituality is that your mind and your body and your emotions are fused together. And the human being reflects in his body what is going on for them. How many times have you met somebody with an accepting smile? A forgiving look. It isn't by coincidence. It isn't by coincidence that the poet talked about
the eyes as being the mirror of the soul. When a person looks at you, they can look at you before the world and say, I have accepted you. The reason, of course, looking in the mirror for Elizabeth Taylor was that she needed to see her disease. And she also needed to trace in her recovery the achievements she was making with her body. That's the way she loved her body. Her body began to get firmer and reflect where she wanted to go in her life. So you need sometimes to have a mirror image. Now, for those of us with codependency, those with us who are alcoholics with sponsors, very often a sponsor is like our mirror. He's like a mirror image of what it is that's going on, and he reflects back to us exactly what we've said. But by the reflecting of it back, sometimes we hear the insanity of what we were doing. So when I talk about stand in front of the mirror, I'm not just thinking of a physical mirror, although of course that can be true and be very helpful. But sometimes you need to have somebody in your life who will tell you what they see and not be afraid of telling you what they see. Another little tip that I have here, I've got three more. Keep a calendar. Keep notes. This is mine. If I read something, if somebody tells me something, I write it in here. I refer back to this. A lot of my lectures are in here. A lot of my thoughts are in here. A lot of things that somebody says to me that I think I can use that. You know? Like God is the only perfect Al-Anon. He detaches, and if you want to go insane, he lets you. But keep notes. Keep notes. Write to yourself. Trace your recovery. You're worth it. One day you may open your book and you may look in these things and you'll say, I remember saying that. The person who gave me that idea is dead now. I remember. Very special in my life. A very special person. Keep notes. Keep a calendar. Write things down. Small thing that I want to say to you, but it's very important to me. Personal hygiene. I'm a very strange person. I can go from the loftiest thoughts to the most basic. Clean your teeth. Okay? Floss. Seriously, wash under your armpits and wash your clothes. Why? Because you're worth it. Seriously. Polish your shoes and make your bed. There's no point in having these great grand poems on joy and a transcendent God who loves those people who are starving in Africa if you've not flossed. And now, the reason why I say that is, if you catch yourself, think of the things that you never did when you were drunk or using or in your disease, and those are the things that you should be doing. Small things. I often say it. Patients have heard me say it. Don't go out of your way to say hello to the doctor if you cannot say hello to the cleaner. I'm serious. If a patient is waiting to say hello to the doctor or say hello to the chief counselor or supervisor and he hasn't said hello to the cleaner who cleaned the hospital, they have missed something. Thank you, Mary. So the bottom line with it all is, seriously, start taking care of your hygiene and your appearance. For yourself. You put your own parameters on it. But I've seen some people, they've come to me over the months that I've been here, and they said, Father Leo, I've had my hair cut, have you seen? Father Leo, I'm wearing contact lenses now. I've not got my glasses on like I used to, I've got some contact lenses on. In other words, that's their self-worth, their self-esteem, and they're sharing that with me. Do the best with what you have. And really start to love yourself by those small things. Some of you put on a suit sometimes, put on a shirt, wear a tie. You don't have to just wander around in the evening like you've been wandering around all day. And that's the way you love yourself. Think about it. Ladies sometimes put on makeup. Sometimes you don't want to, fine. Sometimes it's okay to love yourself by putting makeup on or whatever. And the last thing I can say to all of you, and that is to avoid temptation. Don't go to slippery places. Don't hang around with slippery people. Don't read slippery books or slippery magazines. You don't need it. Remember, if you can create junk in your life, so can other people. You don't have to take other people's junk and put it in your life. Okay? Start to avoid those things that can hurt you and stay with those things that show your love of yourself. That's the key to recovery. Somebody shared with me something, and this is what we're going to end with tonight. It's a very beautiful thing. So I wrote it down. It was based on hugging. Just listen to what this person wrote, and they gave it to me. Hugging is healthy. It helps the body's immune system. It keeps you healthier. It cures depression. It reduces stress. It induces sleep. It's invigorating, it's rejuvenating, it has no unpleasant side effects. Hugging is nothing less than a miracle drug. Hugging is our natural way to be. It is organic. It's naturally sweet, no pesticides, no preservatives. No artificial ingredients or coloring. And it's 100% wholesome. Hugging is practically perfect. There are no movable parts that can break. No batteries. No periodic checkups. Low energy consumption. High energy yield. It's inflation-proof. It's non-fattening. There's no monthly payments. There's no insurance requirements. It's theft-proof. It's non-taxable. It's non-polluting. And, of course, it's fully returnable. Hugging. Find God in the hugs that you give to others. But I'm going to suggest something. Also remember to sometimes hug yourself. Just remind you that if you want this tape, it's available afterwards. Will you join with me in saying, for us all, the Serenity Prayer? Stand and hold the next person's hand with you. Hold one another. Hold their hand. Remember, we're family. Remember, we have the power to change our lives for good or for bad. Let us seek to bring love and healing into our lives and our homes and our world. Let us be remembering those who are still suffering, those who are lonely, those who are frightened, those who have nobody's hand to hold tonight. Let us bring ourselves and all those we love before the throne of God as we understand him or her. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Keep coming back. It works.